Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Really glad to have with me today to talk with you, Jeffrey Glassberg of Morristown, New Jersey. He's founder and president of the North American Butterfly Association. He's author of the books Butterflies Through Binoculars, Two Field Guides, published by Oxford Papers, Oxford University Press. And these guides are divided between Eastern North America and Western North America. He's also the author of Dragonflies Through Binoculars. And he's with us today to talk about butterflies. And, you know, butterflies are something I think all of us enjoy, wish we would see more of. Sometimes when we see one, we wonder, what in the heck butterfly is that? And Jeffrey might be able to answer that question for you. But also, he's got some interesting insights into how butterflies, how they do some courtship. Their migration, things like that. And if you would like to join in with your own questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison at 263-1890, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Jeffrey Glassberg with us by phone today. Jeffrey, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Hi, Larry. A pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back. You've always been interested in butterflies.
Well, almost would be a gross exaggeration. It's only really been since I've been 5 years old. I was interested in birds and butterflies, and some of us just stay that way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I think most people are. As a matter of fact, thinking back a few years ago, you said that the practice of watching butterflies would replace golf as America's pastime.
Well, that's my belief, but I'm a long-term thinker. it won't happen anytime soon, I'm sure. But
any headway?
Well, you know, I think golf is still, you know, pretty popular. I mean, Tiger Woods is helping there. So we need to get Tiger Woods, I guess, interested in butterflies. And if he's listening, Tiger, if you're listening to this.
Well,
we'll say that the more time one spends with butterflies, probably the healthier one is, both physically and psychologically. I mean, I think that really is true.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with you. And as we look, I was just reading an article in this morning's Wisconsin State Journal about how everybody's spending more time inside. Kids are spending more in time.
Right.
Getting out and seeing butterflies is a good, healthy thing to do.
Absolutely. It's a real problem with the kids. We have my wife and I, we have a two-and-a-half-year-old grandson who, of course, is the most wonderful kid in the world. And butterfly was close to his first word, and you know, we take him outside every chance we get, and he loves running and so forth. But it's hard, you know, with all of the video, the electronics. Kids just all get sucked into it.
The 4th of July count of butterflies, that's an annual event in various locations. I think it's in not only in the U.S. but Mexico and Canada as well. Any news from this month's count?
Well, it's just, you know, the count results are you know, coming in now, so I can't, other than, for example, I personally run one in North and West Chester County, New York, even though I live in New Jersey at the moment. Other than for that one and a scattered few, I can't really give you feedback about this year's. There's something like 13 counts in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And but again, this year's results really aren't in. But you know, really, the results, it's not so much the year's snapshot, because butterfly populations vary a lot from year to year. It's following the trends over time. So if you have a count that's been done for 25 years, or lots of counts that have been done for 25 years, then you can start analyzing the data from those counts and making solid conclusions in many cases about if there's some populations that are really in trouble or what general trends are. From each individual year's count, it's a little bit of a one point in time.
Yeah, understood. Are there well, we know there are butterflies that are endangered. Here in Wisconsin, the Karner blue butterfly has received a lot of attention over time.
Well, yeah, you know, Karner Melissa blues, it's actually a subspecies of a very common, of a widespread western butterfly called Melissa blue. And it's on the federal endangered species list, and it certainly it has its problems, but it is found actually from Wisconsin all the way through a good part of the Northeast. Actually, there's other butterflies in Wisconsin that are more endangered than Karner blues. I mean, as you probably know, the Endangered Species Act, there's a lot of politics that go on, things not put on the list or on the list that should be, you know, kind of thing. And, for example, there's a butterfly in Wisconsin called Swamp Metal Mark.
Yeah.
And that butterfly, over its range, is actually arguably much more endangered than is Karner Melissa blues, than our Karner Melissa blues. But there are butterflies that are endangered. Most probably aren't, but unfortunately, with butterflies, as with most wildlife, it's kind of a one-way traffic, because every year there's just less and less habitat.
Yeah. Well, a caller called in and it has a great question. I think it is, how did butterflies get their name? Shouldn't they be called or named flutters-by instead?
Well, if you're asking me, I wouldn't think so. I think the name butterfly is just fine. But the how they got their name, the answer is nobody knows.
Huh.
The name butterfly goes back. It's a very old name. It goes back. It's older than Old English. It's actually one of the older words currently used words in the English language, and goes back to Old English and whatever Old German together was there. And there's different hypotheses. People hypothesize that it has to do with the color of the butterfly, that it's because it's yellow. Like some common ones that would have been in Europe were yellow like butter. Other people have other things. Probably maybe the most likely, but again, it's really speculation, is that when they would make butter and churn butter and so forth, and the damp sands, there are butterflies. Butterflies do things that's often called puddling, and what they do is they'll come to damp sand, and the reason they do that isn't for the liquid in the damp sand, it's for the salts. So if you have certain areas at the edge of streams or on gravel and so forth, you'll sometimes find accumulations of butterflies puddling. And one of the groups of butterflies that do this are these butterflies that are the whites and yellow butterflies. And so my understanding is that parts of Europe now still, when you make butter and so forth, and you can get congregations of these yellow butterflies around there, and people are thinking, well, maybe the name came from that these butterflies got associated in people's mind with butter. Whether there's any truth to that, no one really knows.
But it's a nice answer. It's a great answer. It's as good as any. Oh, boy. I tell you what, we have callers online. Bobby in Pewaukee has something for you. Bobby, hello.
Hello. My first question is, can you tell me the difference between a butterfly and a moth?
Butterflies are the difference is this. Let me just, they're really all closely related. You've got this big group of organisms that really include butterflies and moths, and really butterflies are one subgroup of that. And there's a lot of kind of technical things that identify them as butterflies, and they evolve together. But I'll tell you the kinds of things that I assume part of your question is, well, how can I tell if it's a butterfly or a moth?
Yes.
And I'll try to give you some clues for that. First off, the vast majority of butterflies fly during the day, while the great majority of moths fly during the night. However, in terms of identification, that's problematical because there's still a fair number of moths that fly during the day. Then the other thing is that a lot of butterflies are very colorful and patterned, and there's a biggest percentage of moths are kind of very mute, the colors are very muted and drab. However, again, there's plenty of moths that are brightly colored and beautiful, so that doesn't exactly work either. Then the thing that works the best if you, other than just knowing what they all are, which actually works the best, but if you take a close look at the butterfly or moth in front of you, and if you look at its antennas, the antennas of almost all butterflies and moths are different, and I think of all the ones in the United States are. And that is, the butterfly antennas look basically like a golf club. They're thin toward at the head, and then at the very end they swell up in a club, like the end of a golf club. Whereas moths come in kind of two varieties. One, they have, the antennas are like a tapered filament, that is, it's thickest at the head, and it just tapers to a point. And the other kind, it looks like a giant radar set, you know, with all these cross feathers and so forth. So if you look at the antennas, you can tell them. But the other thing is they fly differently. Butterflies, the moths, their hind wings and the forewings are kind of hooked together a little bit by these structures called the frenulum and reticulatum. And so when they fly, they're kind of this jerky little flight. You see moths going around, whirring around. Whereas butterflies, the forewing and the hindwing, aren't hooked together. So their flight is more flapping and graceful. And, you know, when you look at a butterfly fly, like a very common butterfly, like a cabbage white, it's extremely graceful.
Yeah.
And most moth flights are not graceful. So those are all some clues. But the best thing is just to learn them, and then you just know them when you see them.
Yeah, you know them when you see them.
That is interesting, but I have one more statement. I live in Pewaukee in Wisconsin, and we had a... Now I find out it must be a moth with a wingspread of at least 7 inches.
Sure.
It was beautifully colored, and it's what I would call the abdomen, had red and white horizontal stripes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nowhere else on the moth was that same red. And still, we are always taught nature doesn't make a mistake. But this thing was beautiful. And I could only observe it shortly because I had to take it away from our chicken coop so the chickens wouldn't get it, and put it on a flower, and then I had to leave.
Uh-huh.
When I got back, it left. But this was just a gorgeous thing to see.
So there are many beautiful moths, and there are large ones, too, like Cecropia moths, these silk moths, or Luna moths, or Sphinx moths. So there's a lot of beautiful moths also.
Yeah.
You know, about nature never making a mistake. I don't know, my wife sometimes, when she gets angry at me, claims that that nature made a mistake with me. So I don't know about that.
All right. Bobby, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Sue in Appleton will be on to you now. Hi, Sue.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Excellent topic. Listen, I doubled my milkweed supply because I really love the monarchs.
Yes.
I've got red milkweed and wild milkweed that I've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not seeing any monarch caterpillars. Are they still coming and I just need to be patient?
Oh, yeah. So, absolutely. And every, you know, this is what, you know, what we get here. Many years, we always get calls, you know, in panic.
Okay, I just love watching them grow.
I'm not seeing them this year. What happened, or whatever it is, whatever kind of butterfly. And as I say, it fluctuates year to year. Now, I don't have any report on exactly what the numbers of monarchs are in the upper Midwest this year, but I can say that here in the Northeast, they seem to be doing perfectly fine this year.
Good.
And it just varies from year to year. If you plant your milkweeds, It's pretty certain that, you know, you'll get some monarchs on them. And again, it's going to vary from year to year how many, and it's partly random, you know, whether they happen to particularly find yours and so forth. But you keep planting milkweeds and you get them. But if you also plant, you know, plants that are the caterpillar food fan for other butterflies, then you'll get them also. So you can plant things for black swallowtails or pearl crescents. And
what kind of plants do you recommend for those?
Well, the best thing to do, if you go to the North American Butterfly Association website,
okay,
which is www.naba for North American Butterfly Association, .org, because we're nonprofit. And if you click on Butterfly Gardening and Habitat Program, you can see PDF files for, I can't remember now, it's about 70 regions of the country that tell you what kind of plant. And it's actually in the process of being upgraded to photos and more information, but still, there's a lot of information there, and I just don't remember off the top of my head whether there's ones for Wisconsin. You can put a map on there, and there's a
take
map.
A look, sure.
So they may still come this year yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, there are two for Wisconsin. I'm looking now.
Okay.
There are two of these gardening brochures for different parts of Wisconsin, one in the southwest, one in the central. So you could look at those, and that would give you a lot of ideas for what to plant for butterflies in your area.
Well, thank you for the call.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeffrey Glassberg, our guest today from Morristown, New Jersey, founder and president of the North American Butterfly Association, author of Butterflies Through Binoculars, the East, and Butterflies Through Binoculars, the West, if I'm not mistaken. I'm Larry Mueller, and Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in as we talk butterflies with Jeffrey Glassberg, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 and email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Peter and Racine next. Peter, hello.
Yes, thank you, and it's good to have an opportunity to ask an expert something, Mr. Glassberg.
Hi, Peter.
I saw two butterflies a couple of years ago, regardless. One was black and one was blue, and they were flying together as if they were mating, not fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was wondering, how is it? Is there one species in which one member is an iridescent blue, mid-size, at least mid-size butterflies? One would be iridescent.
Oh,
okay. First off, let me say, sometimes it's hard to tell whether they're mating or fighting. Male butterflies, unlike human males, are pretty indiscriminate who they'll go after. So it's not that uncommon to find species, males of one species, showing a lot of interest. Are we still there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Showing a lot of interest in females of another species, even. That being said, there are a number of possibilities. One thing is there's, but you say it was they were both black, huh? And
no, one was blue and one was black. One was blue and one was black.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, also it depends on the light. There's things that are, there's black swallowtails where the female has a fair amount of iridescent blue on her.
Oh.
And whereas the males are black with a yellow band and don't have really anything much in the way of iridescent blue. And that's a fairly common butterfly where you are. I would say it's a good-sized butterfly, and the black swallowtail's small for small tail, so maybe a mid-size. There's other things. There's red-spotted purples, which have a lot of iridescent blue, but the males and females are similar. But again, it could be that, you know, the male was an old, worn one had, you know, was kind of tattered and didn't look very nice, and so the iridescent blue wasn't very obvious in the female it was. That's a possibility.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Rich in Merrill, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Rich.
Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I have, I'm starting to get a sprawling crop of lupins creeping up the side of a little hill behind our garden. I also have a population of Karna blue butterflies. Mm-hmm. And prior to the bloom, my first question would be, is there a connection between the lupins and the Karna blue as a food source?
Absolutely.
Okay. Second question, they were very visible just prior to the bloom and then during the bloom of the lupins, and now they've disappeared. So my final question, I guess, is can you describe their life cycle or their egg-laying cycle?
Well, again, let's see, off the top of my head, my memory, and again, there's like 750 species of butterflies in the United States, so it's tough to remember
everyone.
Plan for everyone. And I just finished a book, actually much bigger project than these, than the U.S. ones, a book called It's a Swift Guide to the Butterflies of Mexico and Central America, and that treats 1,700 species.
Whoa.
And that's the latest book I have, and if you were interested in that, if you went to a place called www.sunstreakbooks.com, you could find out about it. But anyway, back to your question. my memory is that the Carnimalisa blues, the caterpillars feed on lupins, and but it's not just that they feed on lupins. My memory is that with their success in overwintering had to do with areas where snowpack was certain amounts, and so where the temperature got below a certain amount, and but yet there was snow cover or something like that, and I don't remember the details. But again, if you talk about the adults, and I assume you say, well, I saw them before the bloom, and now I'm not, that you're talking about the adults.
Yes.
Again, my memory, and you'd have to look in my book, Butterflies Through Binoculars of the East, my memory is that Carnimalisa blues have two broods. That is, the adults emerge one time and fly, then they lay their eggs, and then the eggs hatch, of course, and caterpillars come out, and they feed on the lupins, and then the caterpillars pupate, and then they emerge again the same year, later in the year. And then the adults, then those adults emerge and they fly and lay eggs and so forth. So there's two kind of cycles in one year. Is my memory of that? I got to check. My memory could be erroneous. But that is my memory. A lot of butterflies. There are certain kind of butterflies, and of course, it also depends on where in the range it is. There are some butterflies that the adults only fly one time for a year. So it might only be for 2 weeks. There's other butterflies where all through the warm season they're breeding and getting caterpillars and they form adults, and it's all kind of unsynchronized. A butterfly like cabbage white, as soon as it's warm, they're flying, and then they lay eggs, and all through the warm season they're flying. But other butterflies, like the swamp meadow martin, well, that has a butterfly like banded hair streak where you are. That caterpillars feed on oak. They only come out once. The adults only fly once a year, like in June and or July. Then when the caterpillars come in, basically the next adults don't fly till the next year in June or July. Then there's other ones that, you know, it might be two times a year. And I think Carnablu is like that.
All right. Thank you.
Can one last question?
Sure.
Other than maintaining this lupin patch, is there something else I can do to support this population of carnas that I have here?
Well, I think you're doing a great job if you've got carnas. If you've got them there, that's the bottom line. It says you're doing a good job. And so the only thing I could say would be try to increase the lupin, try to get your neighbors to have these lupins and have this same habitat, because the bigger the habitat patch, the greater the chance that the butterfly doesn't die out there. The smaller the patch, it's harder to sustain, you know, when inevitably there'll be a bad year, you know, a disease or bad weather conditions or something. And if the colony is very small, in a bad year it may wipe out all of them and then they're gone from there, you know, at least for a while, if not forever, depending on how isolated it is. And the bigger the colony, then the more likely it is to weather these bad conditions, because there might be some individual that has the genetics that allows it to be resistant to the disease or to survive these environmental conditions. And so the bigger the area you can make, the more likely it is the butterfly will survive. So if you can convince neighbors in your area, not even necessarily your immediate neighbors, but, you know, to also get involved in this, that would then create real habitat and increase the number of Carnimalisa blues in the world.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Joya in Fitchburg, we're on to you now. Hi, Joya.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have a question for him. There are some countries and some places they cultivate actively butterfly. You know, is there any place like that in Wisconsin or Midwest?
I don't know. There are places. You know, there are plenty of butterfly farms, and these farms, they're farms. Like, you know, people raise chickens and or people raise whatever, you know, plants or chickens or. Well, there are farms that raise butterflies, and there are ones outside the U.S., but there are ones in the U.S., United States too. And I do not know if there are ones in Wisconsin. My guess would be there would be somebody in Wisconsin doing that. And these people that have farms, there are basically two things they do with their farm butterflies. One thing they do is they sell them to zoos, butterfly zoos. And as far as the North American Butterfly Association is concerned, that's fine. That's, you know, these indoor exhibits. And the other thing they do with them, though, is people that have these farm butterflies is they sell them to people that don't know any better in the public who think it's nice, who are going to take these farm butterflies, and then they dump them into the environment, whether it's at a wedding or whatever they think is going to be nice. And that's a tragic mistake. That's a terrible thing. Because it simply spreads diseases to the wild butterflies and the only thing it can do is decrease the population of wild butterflies, and it also messes up scientists who are trying to study butterfly movements and everything. So that part of it is a terrible idea, really. The part about selling to zoos is fine.
Okay.
Okay, and also the answer to the question, lady who called for the plants for butterfly.
Yes,
there are several plants like milkweed, butterfly weed, and if she wants, she can call the Prairie Garden Center or a Flower Garden Center. They have a catalog which attracts butterflies.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. As I said, that's very helpful, and there's also a lot of information at the NABBA website.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling, Joy. I appreciate it. Karen in Franklin's up next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
At least in Franklin, we have plenty of monarchs because I raised them. We've released at least 34 or 5 already this season.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 24 eggs in the house and caterpillars in various stages, and even have encouraged the kids, and some of the neighborhood kids think it's kind of cool, and they now know what to look for on the milkweed we have.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a question not about the monarchs, because I pretty much know about them, but about a caterpillar that I found on the milkweed in searching for eggs and
mm-hmm.
caterpillars that is not a monarch. It's
right.
not a that caterpillar.
Right.
I had found one a couple years ago, too, and I think it's the same thing, and I brought it in and let it eat its milkweed, and it was a moth.
Right.
It started out as a really, and this year I found, I think, one that's just like it. Started out, this time it was much smaller, very pretty blonde, fuzzy hair.
Yeah. Well, to be frank, I don't know that much about moths, but two things. I think, one, you're right that it's a moth, not a butterfly, and I say that because there really aren't any other butterflies other than monarch and its close relatives, which aren't found in Wisconsin, that feed on, the caterpillars feed on milkweed. So it's a moth. And my guess, and it's just a guess, I say, I really don't know moths that well. My guess is it's a milkweed tussock moth.
Okay.
I say that with some trepidation because I think there are some other moths that feed on milkweed. But that would be my guess, to look up milkweed tussock moth and see if that doesn't match your thing. And in addition, I point out for caterpillars, we have a book called, it's a field guide to caterpillars, Caterpillars in the Field and Garden. It's a field guide to the caterpillars of all of the butterflies of North America. And that's also Oxford University Press. And it does include a fair number of moth caterpillars, just to show you what aren't butterflies. But it's a field guide to all of the butterfly caterpillars of North America, which is, so there's like, again, I think there's, you know, there's like 700 species or something in there.
And I should just mention that Phil Pelletieri, our UW entomologist, will be on tomorrow's program, and he probably will have a good idea as to to that moth as well. It sounds like Jeffrey's got it, though. Thanks, Karen, for calling.
Thank you.
Tom in Cashton is up next. And by the way, before we go to Tom, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We've got open lines. We'll get you on. Tom, thank you for calling. Hello.
Okay, thank you. I know about the host specificity of the milkweed and the Queen Anne's lace, but for years I used to chop down stinging nettle with a vengeance, and then
yeah.
Someone told me that it was host specific to a particular butterfly. True or false? And
the
butterfly?
Yeah, Red Admirals, it is one of the most commonly used food plants for a butterfly named Red Admiral, which is a pretty nice-looking butterfly,
yeah.
Are nettles. It does use a few other things, too, like pellitory or something it's called, and some other things. But its main caterpillar food plant is, in fact, nettles. And so, you know, I mean, it depends what you can stand. Nettles are, you know, in a garden are, they do have the capability to sting people, so you have to be careful. But, you know, we certainly, without nettles, red admirals would be in big trouble. So you're right to say, geez, maybe I should not chop them all down.
Yeah, I just tell my kids and that, leave them alone. That's where a particular butterfly goes. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Laura in Arpin, your turn now. Hi, Laura.
Hello. I was just wondering if butterflies actually use those wooden butterfly houses that you see at craft fairs.
Well, what I would say is this, is that the butterfly houses, they perhaps say to people, oh, you know, this garden, I care about butterflies because I have that in my garden. And perhaps they, you might think that they look nice and that they add some architectural interest to your garden, and those would all be good reasons to have them. However, there is no evidence at all, and quite to the contrary, that they really are just about ever used by a butterfly. Now, I you know, in the real world, something always happens. So I'm sure somewhere, some time, some butterfly went into one of these. But basically, no, it has no value to butterflies.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Frances in Muskego next. Hi, Frances.
I'm wondering if you're aware of this or if I'm just, you know, we're building this billions of mosquitoes this year, and we've got a big backyard, a lot of bushes and flowers and stuff, and so I'd like to work in them. So I decided this year to buy some of those sprays that you hook onto the hose.
Okay.
And also I decided to buy some of that dust.
Okay.
And lo and behold, I came home and started to use it. Husband read the label and he said, hold it, it kills the bees.
Yeah.
And he also, I was wondering, would that kill the butterflies too? Not that it, I'm just upset that they sell stuff that is that potent.
Sure. I don't know what the substance or substances are that you purchased there, but yes, the vast majority of insecticides, things that are sold to kill whether it's mosquitoes or other insects, the vast great majority of those, of course, kill butterflies. And so, you know, if you've got a garden, for example, you want to and you want to have butterflies and other things, you want to be careful about what you use out there, and there are kind of natural ways to try to hold down populations of things that you don't want. I think even, you know, the much bigger problem, I mean, the homeowner thing like you have, I mean, that's something of an issue, but the bigger problem for butterflies is this widespread spraying for things like gypsy moths and other things, which is basically spends hundreds of millions of dollars a year, completely wasted your taxpayer money, fighting something that shouldn't be fought. And it has to go on every year, these people. And if they just left it alone, it would equilibrate. And meanwhile, it's really having a tremendously bad effect on the butterflies throughout all of the forests in North America, butterflies and moths, where they spray completely unnecessarily for these gypsy moths. So whenever possible, which should be essentially almost always, it's good not to use these products.
Okay, thank you. But I just wondered how many people did it and weren't even aware of it, because it's in fine print and, I mean, you know, you would just innocently go out and buy it. It's
absolutely right. I agree with you. You know that you know it ought to be a lot of people. That's right. They do things the well-meaning way, but they just don't know. As I said, like with the releasing the farm butterflies, they think it's nice. They don't realize it's going to actually spread diseases and kill off the native butterflies. Or just like you're saying, you think you want to get rid of the mosquitoes, you didn't realize it's going to kill off all the bees and the butterflies. So I think it's always good to give people the honest information.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Are butterflies guided by hearing, by the way? Well, you know, if your conversations or something drive them away?
The answer to that is, luckily, you know, it's an interesting question because, you know, as I said in the very top of this program, since I was five, I've been interested in birds and butterflies. So I was a serious birder most of my life, in addition to doing butterflies. And you can probably even tell, listening, I'm not the quietest guy around. And if I go out with a group of birders, you know, they kind of stone me because I'm talking in this voice, which sounds normal to me, but which is maybe fairly loud, and they're saying it's scaring off the birds. But with butterflies, you can go and you can socialize, because you can go on a group with a group of people, look at butterflies, and you can be sitting and talking about whatever you want to be talking about, gossiping about the people that aren't there, for example, and that won't affect the butterflies whatsoever. You can walk right up to them and talk. Now, so the answer to your question is almost certainly, almost all the time, sounds and talking the butterflies won't hear. However, I will say there are a few kinds of butterflies that can hear sounds.
Huh.
And to the best of our knowledge, none of them are found in Wisconsin. And again, you know, there aren't billions of dollars being put into butterfly research, so people don't know everything. But there are butterflies in the tropics that have hearing organs. They're not ears like we have it, and they can hear sounds. And there are some that actually make sounds, like there's butterflies called crackers. They barely make it up into South Texas. They're tropical. And the males, when they fly at each other, they make this cracking sound by changing the air pressure in their veins, and presumably they can hear each other. So there are some butterflies that can hear, but the great majority, no. So when you go out in the field, don't worry. You can talk and have a good time.
Jeffrey, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
And Jeffrey Glassberg of Morristown, New Jersey, is founder and president of the North American Butterfly Association. Take a look at their website. It's nabanaba.org, nabanaba.org. And he's the author of Butterflies Through Binoculars, The East. It's a field guide to butterflies of eastern North America, and that includes Wisconsin in that particular book. So a pleasure to have him with us. And we'll probably be dealing with butterflies again on the program, I would bet. Coming up, we're going to take a look at consumer protection issues with Glenn Lloyd. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.